and it's recording. So today is the 31st of July, 2012, and this is Pat Hovey. Is it Pat or Patricia?
It's Patricia.
Patricia.
And it's spelled P-E-T-R-E-C-I-A.
And how do you spell your last name?
Hovey, H-O-V-E-Y.
Okay, and I'm Tom Martin, and we are at the Grand Canyon
atrium
of the Grand Canyon Plaza resort. Yep. And so, Pat, if you wouldn't mind to just tell me a little bit about your parents. What year were you born? What did they do? What were their names? How did they meet?
I don't know how they met. In Chicago, because my mother was born there. I'm not sure where my dad, I need to look at my dad's birth certificate and see where he was born. I'm sure they met in Chicago. Mom was a secretary. Dad was a research chemist. And I was born in 1924. Born later in their lives, so I was an only child. And the Patricia comes from Peter. My dad's name was Franz Peter and was German like Hannah and Frank. My mother was Swedish. So it was a combination. When I was five, my dad was told he had pernicious anemia and wouldn't live more than 5 years. So we moved to Michigan to a house that they had built sometime before, and that's where I grew up. Dad didn't work, but he did a lot of things at home. I mean, he still did chemistry, and Mom. I don't remember a whole lot of growing up, but I remember Mom worked a lot, and I'm sure that was just to bring money in. But I had a great growing up period because we lived out from town, and you made your own fun. So, I had a good friend who lived across the lake from me, and we would swim together, ice skate together, and do things together. But my walk to school was probably 2 miles, maybe. And wintertime, you slog through the snow, and in the summer, it was beautiful. Lived on a lake, which we still have, and still go back to for 2 weeks every summer. And just a great growing up time. You know, it was before television and before gadgets, and so you did, you made your own fun, whatever it was. And summer times, my cousin's family, my uncle had inherited my grandmother's home at the lake, and so they would come summers and spend time with us in their house and in our, you know, but we got together. And those years I know we still had an ice box where we had to get ice from the iceman who came, and I remember my grandmother's house having this great big, it would be like a deep freeze now, the box type, and I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. Of course, it took lots of ice, but it was just a great time. Our kids were fortunate later on, had kind of the same thing. We lived in Death Valley, and they had to make their own fun. because there was no television. And they did. So it was a good time. And went to grade school up until seventh grade in a one-room school. And then there were just too many kids, and so they transported the seventh and eighth grade to a school about 6 miles from us. And first year we had our own teacher and our own, our group was seventh and eighth grade were together. But the second year they combined with the school we went to, and our teacher, we had had taught seventh grade, and we had a teacher who taught eighth grades. So I had two different teachers, and that's where I met my husband. I was in seventh grade or eighth grade, probably seventh grade, and we didn't really connect at that time, but because our names were close, I guess, we sat one in front of the other. And then graduated from eighth grade, went on to high school in Muskegon, which was the big town at that time. And didn't see my husband very much after that until we graduated from high school, and he asked me if I would like to go out after graduation. So we did, and we kind of did things together. I saw another fella. His name was Fern Hubby. And we went together from after graduation, and he went to junior college, and I started, but my dad needed somebody to drive him because he did not drive. And by this time, my mother had died. And so I left school and kind of did that. And also, he worked at the health department. My dad did at that time. And so I did things at the health department when they needed somebody to do filing or something. And Vern went off to service the following January, which was, we graduated in 42, so that would have been 43. And I had met his family by then, and they kind of adopted me, and I kind of adopted them and got to know them. And when there was Christmas or Thanksgiving, they included my dad, which was nice. And Vern was in service until 1945, and by that time he had asked me to marry him, and so we were married in July 30th.
Your husband was in which branch of the service?
Seabees, Navy.
Where?
South Pacific. Couldn't would have liked to go in the Air Force, but he couldn't pass the eye exam, and went in the Seabees and loved it, drove big vehicles and made roads and landing strips and so on. And like I say, he came home in probably summer of 45, and then went back to school, and went 2 years at junior college in Muskegon, and went, well, like I say, we got married the following July, so yesterday was our anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
And we were married on my mom and dad's 25th wedding anniversary, which made it special for me. I'm not sure. I think it was for Vern, too. And so we had good years together, and after he finished junior college, we went to Houghton, Michigan. It's the College of Michigan College of Mining and Technology at that time, and he got a degree in civil engineering in 1950, and got a job in Cleveland, Ohio, working for a company that was building the rapid transit system in Cleveland, and. We should have kept track because one job led to another, and he had three or four different jobs in Cleveland and ended up working at a company that did the underground work of the rapid transit under the Cleveland Union Terminal. And he came home one day and said to me, I have to put a hole in the floor. And he said, I'm not sure what's going to happen. But it worked out okay. And during that time, he met Fred Harvey people and became acquainted with several of them. And at that time, Fred Harvey had never had a chief engineer. I'm not sure what they did, but they hired a man by the name of Al Henderson, who was an ex-Army man, retired. And he had met Vern and asked him if he would like to go to Death Valley, California. So they took a trip, flew to Death Valley, flew to Las Vegas and drove to Death Valley. And Vern came back and he said to the kids, how would you like to live in the desert? And they said, are they camels? 1956. And so that was probably May or June, and we packed up in September, and well, the kids and I spent the summer in Michigan, which we had done for years. And
had you been west yet?
I had been west when Vern was in service. I had come out because I had an aunt who lives in San Jose. And Vern was stationed near there. So I stayed with her and then could see him when he had time off. But yeah, I had...
And what were your thoughts that would have been the mid-40s during World War II when you'd gone out to stay with your aunt to then see Vern? What were your thoughts of the West as you traveled through it, coming and going?
You know, I probably took the train out and didn't really think too much about it. Loved California because there were so many flowers and everything was so green you know, at that time, you don't think much about living there. I think now people have different thoughts about, oh, I'd love to live there. But I'd spent all my life in Michigan no thoughts of moving. It was passage of time, and you did what you did and went from there. So we I'm trying to think. We did have a moving van that moved our things because Fred Harvey moved us. And so we, moving van, I think got there after we did, but we had an old car with no air conditioning, and the only thing that made it bearable for the kids was Vern told them they could swim when we got to Death Valley. And so, had no idea about Death Valley or what there was, and so didn't do any grocery shopping or anything, didn't have any idea what we were into, and went to Death Valley proper, to the valley, and stayed in a small cabin, and the kids I think we were there probably a couple of days before school started, but we were going to live in Death Valley Junction, which was 30 miles from the valley, but the kids had to go 30 miles each way to school in Shoshone. And so first day I took Pat and Tom to school, and somebody said, well, you got to get groceries. So I shopped in this little town.
In Shoshone.
And learned that, you know, if you want to do any shopping, you went to Vegas. But.
And what year were Pat and Tom born?
Pat was born in 48. Tom was born in 50. Sue in 51. And Nan in 53.
Okay.
And Pat was born in Muskegon, where we lived. Tom was born up in Houghton. Sue was born in Cleveland. Nancy was born in Lakewood, Ohio. So I said they were all born in different places. But
so was the lodge built at the time in Death Valley?
The hotel.
Yeah, the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The hotel was there, and there was cabins at the ranch. Well, what did they call them? They had a name for them. They were kitchen, eating area, and two bedrooms, I think. And anyhow, there was no place for us to live in the valley at that time, so. We moved to Death Valley Junction, where we lived in the Gower House. And Harry Gower was the engineer for the Borax Company, which...
U.S. Borax?
Borax Company was the owner of the inn and the ranch, and Fred Harvey bought them from them. So... we lived in Harry Gower's house, which was, kids couldn't believe it. In fact, when we moved in, one of the fellas from the ranch who helped unload the moving van said, you could have a dance in here, because the living room was so big. But it was a dining room, kitchen, big living room. A bedroom downstairs, laundry room, and then an upstairs, which had three bedrooms, I think. So it was a fascinating place to live. But we only lived there 1 year, and then we moved to the valley. And they took a house. And I'm not sure who would live there, but anyhow, they converted a house to suit our family. And so we moved down there, and then the kids started the one-room school. I think, I was trying to remember this morning, Sue and Nan weren't in school yet when we moved out there. So they both started in this one-room school. with one teacher, and then before we left there, they had two teachers in two rooms. And so I think it was an experience that a lot of kids don't experience. You know, they're thrown into, 20 and 30 kids in a room, and now they have, But.
What kind of projects was Vern working on? Do you remember?
Well, at that time, Death Valley made their own power. They had a generating plant that generated power. And so that was part of his. Had to make sure that everything ran well in the valley. The water for the swimming pools came from creek or...
The springs
springs
system
that
there?
Came up the mountains. And had to make sure that worked. And at the inn, emptied their water every night. Their swimming pool water. The ranch did not. But I think probably at that time, Vern had maybe a half a dozen men working for him. And you just had to make the inn and the ranch work. And at that time, the inn closed in the summer, and the ranch closed in the summer, and they only kept the skeleton crew.
Did you guys stay in the summer? Or did you?
We didn't. Vern took us back to Michigan. The kids and I spent the summer in Michigan, and he went to Grand Canyon and worked Grand Canyon, and then would go once a month to Death Valley and make sure everything was okay.
When did he first, so Harvey sent him to Grand Canyon then at one point?
We finally ended up at Grand Canyon. But at that time it was just some place for him to go because there wasn't anything really to do.
The summer,
they had a skeleton crew.
I see, okay.
Because they had a eight-hole, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Golf course?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
It's a small golf course. It's not a big golf course.
Yeah.
That's
it's half a...
Yeah, it's half
know.
A, yeah.
They put cows on that to get the grass cooked in the summertime. And he had to make sure that the power and everything was okay. And then he would go back and do whatever needed at the canyon. So that was, I think we were 6 years in Death Valley.
From 1956 to 1962 then?
No, 60. So it would have been 4 years.
And what were your thoughts of Death Valley at the time? I mean, it must have been a huge shift for the family.
Probably the best times of our lives. The kids had to make their own fun. Vern had a playhouse built for the kids, and they had a sandbox. And Date Orchard was right outside our door, and the kids would go out and make clay pots in the Date Orchard. And Nan went back several years later when Sue and Eric were working there, and went out in the Date Orchard and made clay pots.
Mm-hmm.
So, memories were good. And I always said it was kind of like when I was growing up. You had to make your own fun. And whenever birthdays came along, we had all the kids from the school for lunch. Because it was only from one side of the ranch to the other to go to school. And they always wanted to take their lunch. And I said, you're not that far from home. I said, you can come home. So I think on Fridays they took their lunch. And And the girls had to wear dresses. And they said, how come? And I said, because that's just the way it is. But it was a good time. And we met a lot of people down there. And we met a lot of the Harveys. And we met, we got to know the general managers. It was small enough yet that you got to know all the people that worked there. And that was where I met. I think I met Rosemary, was down there.
Rosemary Acosta.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And just a good time. I don't know how to expound anymore on that. It was because you did the things. Oh, and I ventured onto the golf course and took some golf lessons. And by that time, the kids were all in school. And Vern was always bringing somebody home who something, they'd had car problems or something. And one day he came home and he said, I need your toaster. And I said, why? And he said, Stovepipe Wells doesn't have a toaster, they need a toaster. And it was, my mind is blank on names, but Amelia Earhart's husband had married a gal, and she ran Stovepipe Wells. And so sometime after the toaster incident, she asked the family to dinner there at Stovepipe Wells. And you know, it just expanded the kids' arena of people that they knew and connections that they had. And there was always people coming, especially to the inn. And you always had, they had cocktail parties, and it was just a good way to meet people and people I never thought I would meet.
Like who?
Oh, well, down there, I don't really remember. Of course, all the Harveys came in off and on. And one time I remember, our chef at the time at the ranch made iced tea in a jar and set out in the sun. And Stuart Harvey came along one day and he said to the chef, what's that? And he said, I'm making iced tea. And he had never heard of it, you know, and kind of raised his eyebrow a little bit. But I think of Christmases, there used to be people that would come in, bring their Christmas presents, bring their Christmas trees, especially to the inn, and spend their Christmases in Death Valley, which to me was, it was family, but it still wasn't what I remember as Christmas. You know, we stayed home at Christmas. But I'm sure as if I'd had 6 months to think about this, I would have had lots of people to remember. But you did. You just, you know, it was people who came, it was a destination for a lot of people. And so it was fun to know that you were involved. And the Park Service at that time was about 4 miles away from us, and their kids went to school in the valley, same one that our kids. So we met lots of Park Service people, and people we have kept in contact with over the years. And oldest daughter Pat still has a friend that she keeps in touch with from down there. I'm trying to think if there's, oh, I know, we have been, this is throwing names out. we, Brother Byrne had met a couple from Omaha, Nebraska, and their name was Buffett. And he was a nephew of Warren Buffett. And I think she had forgotten her binoculars, and so Byrne came to borrow the binoculars so she could birdwatch. And one summer on our way east, they asked us to stop. And so we stopped at their Omaha. We never met Warren, but they had an old store in Omaha, and I think it still is there, that they had taken all the old cash registers and things and put up on the second floor to make a museum kind of thing. And at that time, Warren Buffett was just getting started in his buying stock. And they asked Byrne if he wouldn't like to buy it. And he said, I don't have money to buy and invest. We're just starting out. So it's been fun to, you know, to have those memories that you knew people who were related to people. And yeah. I'm sure there were lots of others who we met that way.
Would you drive back east in the summer, or would you take the train, or would you fly?
We usually drove back. So I had the car. Then Byrne would take the train back or fly back. And then he'd bring us in this, I think kids were out of school in May. He'd take us back, and then he'd come pick us up the week before school started in the fall.
And you were driving Route 66?
Yes.
What kind of car did you have?
It was a Buick. I'm not sure what year. A Buick that a friend of ours was in the car business, and he said, got this car, it's hail damage, but he said probably out in Death Valley, all the hail damage would be gone. So I think we drove that probably a couple of years before we got something up. But, you know, it was like everybody else. Nobody had air conditioning in their cars at that time. And you stopped. Kids always remember we stopped in Garden City, Kansas, because they had a public swimming pool. And the kids could go swimming and cool off. And at that time, there were a few Fred Harvey houses still along the route. And if our trip hit one of those, we could stop and stay all night there and then go on. And then I had a cousin who lived in Chicago, and we always stopped one night there and then on to Michigan. And at that time, my dad's house was right next to the cottage that we now have. And the cottage was built by my cousin, who did all the work. He was an architect, built all the boards. He had all figured out how to make the windows and make the doors, and came up and dug the basement by himself.
Wow.
And laid the blocks, and then a friend of his would come up and help him put the house together. And it's just a small house, but kind of like a Pullman downstairs. The downstairs has a kitchen and a dining area, and then had a hide a bed. And the hide a bed pulled out, and the table pulled down like in a train where you put the table down and put the cushions, and then upstairs was just one big room with a bathroom and two beds up there. And so for the kids and I, it was just right.
Nice.
And lots of memories, you know, because Roy and Louise were close to me. He was a big brother that I didn't have. I was an only child, and so the kids, you know, kids had that connection too because they grew up with them. But then back to Death Valley, Pat was going to go into seventh grade, and she would have had to go 60 miles each way to school.
Where was the school then? Where was 60 miles out?
Shoshone.
Okay.
Because we were living in the valley by then.
Okay.
And so the engineer at Grand Canyon's daughter had just graduated. And so they swapped jobs and we swapped houses. And he went to Death Valley and we came up here and
what
we lived in his
that?
House. And he lived in our house in Death Valley.
Do you remember his name and do you remember what year that was?
John Feedham, and it would have been 60.
Okay.
And I think John retired from Death Valley, and then they moved to Vegas, I think.
Hmm.
So, kind of a different thing, but Verna, of course, got busy right away, and kids were ready for school, and
and he was working with Herschel Stifner at that time?
Stifler,
thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Hersch was the general manager.
And who was he like? What do you remember of him?
Oh, you know, we have kept in touch with Hersch and Laverne. Hersch died many years ago. Laverne, I think, developed Alzheimer's. I'm not sure because her daughter never really said. But they had retired to Sun City.
Laverne was his wife?
Yes. And they would spend summers. They bought a home up in it was up where the fires were in Colorado. By Pike Peak, and I can't remember the town.
Colorado Springs?
No.
Or
I heard it just the other day. Anyhow, they spent, when they retired, they spent summers there and then winters in Sun City.
Hmm.
So Verna and I would go out probably once a month and have dinner with them. And
in Phoenix? When they were in
Phoenix.
Sun City?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And kept in touch. And after Hersch died, we still went to see Laverne and had dinner usually once a month.
Nice.
So it was, you know, it was a good connection. And another instance where the family knew them and, you know, had a lot of memories of them. So at that time, after we moved to the canyon, there was a greenhouse shop. Up next to the road that leads, just when you go up the hill below the Elton Bar and then on, there was a greenhouse there.
Oh.
So Vern said, oh, you can take care of the greenhouse. So I played with that and probably not real successful, but it was fun. It was something to do.
Yeah.
And kids were all in school by that time. And
going to the Grand Canyon School.
Yes.
Where the commute wasn't quite so bad.
No, that was like Death Valley. They, you know, had a block and a half to walk to school.
Mm.
And but you know, it was a different atmosphere than Death Valley. Bigger, more people, more kids for the kids in school. But they made friends easily and, you know, had a lot of friends. And a lot of those friendships have held over because they, you know, in a small school, and Grand Canyon was still small. I think it's like anywhere you form a friendship with people. And I'm not sure what year Ben Quinn came to the canyon, but his boys were our kids' ages, and so there's still a friendship there, you know, that they...
What did Ben do?
Ben was a general manager for a while.
After Herschel?
I'm not sure if he came right after Hersch or not, but... And I think Ben had spent one winter in Death Valley when we were there too, but came alone because his family was in Phoenix, and we're renting a motel there at that time. So
what was it like for you going from Death Valley, where basically it shut down in the summer, so that you could go back to Michigan and hang out with family and friends back east, to the Grand Canyon, which was busy in the summer? That was the hot time, and in the winter would basically shut down.
Well, our kids were still young enough, they couldn't work. So we still, it wasn't until Pat and Tom were old enough to work that we stopped doing that.
So you still went back east in the summers?
We still went back to Michigan that summer. So it probably was... Pat would have been 16, which at that time I think was, you could work at 15 with a permit. I'm not sure if Tom was 15 or his dad might have put him to work before that, but Pat went to work as a Harvey girl, and so we spent summers here, but I think we took 2 weeks and went back to Michigan.
Nice.
Saw family and...
Mm-hmm.
But it was... It wasn't too hard to transfer from Death Valley to Grand Canyon, I don't think. The difference was there were more people and there were more more things going on and more people. We made lots of friends and one couple that we had met in Death Valley came to Grand Canyon. Bill and Thelma Holden, and Bill was the auditor or the accountant, or I'm not sure which he was, at both Death Valley and Grand Canyon. And in Death Valley, the kids got to know these people because it was smaller and there were more things that they would be involved with than at Grand Canyon. But they all had their own things going on in school and friends, so we kind of did our own thing too. And you get involved with PTA, and we got involved with the church at Grand Canyon right away. I don't know, days went, and you know, you don't know where they go. You're busy, and of course with kids at home, why, there's always something going on.
And so you would have met the Bear Camps?
Yes.
Do you remember of them?
You know, by the time we met the Bear Camps, Jack's first wife had died, but he had remarried. And so, and then Jack's mother, Muzz, and his sister Peggy were always in. At that time, there was more get together with all the people, the Bear Camps and Park Service and Fred Harvey. I think there was more, I don't know if friendship is the right word, but.
Camaraderie?
You did more things together. I just have a feeling there isn't that anymore up here. Kind of too bad, but different time, different place. So you know, everybody was invited when there was something special going on. The park superintendent was invited, and the Fred Harvey people who head our departments were invited. And Chicago people who came in, you know, you always had a dinner. And so in that way, we were fortunate to meet a lot of the Harveys and a lot of the Chicago office people, which probably doesn't happen anymore. I think Fred Harvey has become too big a, it's not Fred Harvey anymore, which is kind of sad. You know, I'm glad that daughter Sue's business still carries the Fred Harvey name on some of their things. It probably won't always be so, because as the company is sold, people have different ideas and different ways to do things. But like with Hannah and Frank, when they came, you know, there was always something going on. And
what were your thoughts on meeting them, which would have been 1970, maybe, late 60s?
Late 60s, maybe. I'm not sure. There was a friendship right away. Of course, Vern had met Frank beforehand, so he knew a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some people just mesh when they meet, and I think this is the way with Hannah and Frank. We just got along good together, and I remember Hannah used to love to have people over for dinner, and would do that. And we did. I think we did more things in our homes, along with all the dinner parties that went on. And but Frank and Hannah and I usually, when we get together, well, when Vern was alive too, you know, you went back to the old days, what you remembered and who you remembered. So it was, it's always fun to come. And you don't see that many, the old time people. In fact, there's not too many left anymore, I don't think.
What do you remember of Merle Stitt?
He was another one. You know, there were a lot of superintendents that we just loved, that got along well. And superintendents kind of came and went. When we first came, John McLaughlin was the superintendent up here. And his daughter and our Pat were good friends. And our son Tom and their son, now I won't remember his name. Anyhow, we're good friends. And so we got together a lot. And I think most of the early superintendents, after we came, you know, for whatever reason, we met and we got along. And I'm trying to think who else. John McLaughlin and Merrill Stitt, and probably a couple others. And I
maybe
to.
Dick Marks. No. Newshanger. I'm trying to remember. Is it George?
Yeah, the kids probably would remember better than I. But until probably the last two superintendents, you're still invited them to things, but there wasn't that closeness. Because I think it was starting maybe to get away from Park Service was asking more, maybe, of the concessionaire than than they had. But the friends we made were the friends that last. So,
what do you remember of Emery Kolb?
mostly his car accidents. I can remember Catherine Wilcox talking about Emery going to the post office and backing into somebody at the post office, and he said, "Oh, that's all right." He said, "Send me the bill. I'll pay it." You know, but he was eccentric, but he was fun to listen to. He just, his life has been such an adventure, and I think that his wife maybe had died before we came. I'm not sure, but we knew Edith, and it's one of those things that you say, "Oh, I remember him," you know, and you remember the silly things about him as much as the brilliant things about him. I'm just so glad that they're leaving the building on the rim and, you know, not doing anything, because it's a story.
Have you taken a tour? Have you been downstairs? Since they fixed it up?
No, I have not.
You need to do that.
Down to the living quarters or down? No, I'm trying to think. We were up here for something and they did a tour. But I think we didn't have time. And it's something you have to know the right people to get down there, don't you?
You know, I bet if you just show up there, the people that are working the studio would be glad to try to get somebody over or just take the time to have the keys there. They just let you in and show it to you right then and there. So.
Because I think we were probably in there once or twice when Emery was alive, and that picture window in the front of his house is just tremendous.
So did you guys do any hiking or exploring of the canyon? Did you get over to the North Rim and
probably the North Rim, not until after we left. I think the North Rim after we left. The kids did lots of hiking. Hiked into the canyon in moonlight and came out the next day. Vern did many trips down, I think mostly on mules, because that was part of his work down there too, was the Fan Ranch. So I'm not sure how often he would go, but, whenever needed, he would take a trip down.
Did he help on the pipeline?
Well, I don't think he helped on the pipeline, but we knew the Halvertons, and of course, watch it, because that was important to the South Rim to have the water come down.
Yes.
When they were building it, Vern's mom and dad came out, and Vern's mom did not like high places. She wouldn't look over the rim or anything. So we were out on Ayaki Point one day, and the helicopter had just landed and was going back to the airport. And Vern, I'm sure, had talked to Elling beforehand, got his mom and dad and all the kids, and they took the helicopter back to the... And Vern's mother loved it, but, she had no idea what was happening when they put her on this helicopter.
What was her name?
Tilly.
Tilly. Uh-huh. And her husband's name?
Charles. Charlie. As common as they come. I don't know how to describe them, really. Just great people, Give you the shirt off their back. And our kids were the first grandkids. So of course that was special. Hmm. And have pictures of the kids out in their garden picking strawberries and grandpa showing him things and grandma showing him flowers and so. And like I say, that's what I had missed growing up and what our kids remember from back then. And I'm so glad we had those years and we could spend back there. And know my dad too. My dad, I'm trying to think, my dad died before Burns folks.
Did he outlive the doctor's predictions?
He did. He lived to be 90. He had just had his 90th birthday.
Oh, that's great.
And passed away the next day. Oh. So.
Did you know the Babbitts?
Mm-hmm. Probably Vern knew him better than I do because he had lots of transactions with him, building-wise. Because Vern built the Abbify building. He built Pacina and the Thunderbird. And he also, I have to stop what I was going to say.
We were talking about the Babbitts and his relationship with women, and then he built the hotels.
Yep. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, no worries.
But built the things that, probably now could not be built. And they talk about every few years taking down those buildings on the river. So it'd be kind of sad if they do. It's kind of fun. Vern hired John Hyatt to become the transportation man up here when John Cunningham retired. And he and his wife had never been here. And so Vern got them rooms on the rim. And, you know, there's nothing like opening the curtains on those rim rooms and seeing the canyon in the morning. And so it'd be a shame, but I suppose eventually somebody will. Hopefully not, but. And they moved the Brown Building, which Sue tells me is still there, and I have not found it. It's over somewhere around where the train spends the day, or where they turn around. Somewhere over there. It was on the rim where the Kachina, I never remember the Kachina or Thunderbird, which is which, but they moved it. And of course you spend all day watching them move that building from the rim down through the motor lodge and then where it finally landed. And that was Brown Building was in the men's dorm. I'm not sure who lived there in the Brown Building. The girls' dorm was the stone one.
Coulter? Was that Coulter Hall?
The girls' dorm, uh-huh. And then the men's is still down across from community building. But I'm not sure who lived in the Brown Building. Anyhow, they moved it so they could build other things. But it was a fun time to see all these things being built.
And then when AmFac took over from Fred Harvey, what was that transition like?
You know, I think it was good. It was hard to see the Fred Harvey name go because AmFac, it was AmFac after that. And
Did Vern stay with...
Vern stayed, and I'm not sure what happened. The fella who was head of AmFac, I'm not sure why he wanted to change things up here, but he wanted Vern and I to go to Death Valley. And Vern said, no, that's not, you know. And so we left the company in 72. So there have been lots of changes since then.
What did you do then?
I'm not sure how. Vern connected with a Mormon company in Phoenix, and went to work for them probably within the year after we left. And they were owned by Western Savings at that time. And I think about 5 or 6 years after Vern joined them, they, five of the fellows decided to buy the company and form their own company, which they did. And Vern stayed with them until he retired. So it's still around, but it's a very small company.
And he was doing engineering projects for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Design and had two girls who did all the interior planning for hotel rooms and so on.
And did you guys move to Phoenix then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd moved Sue down to go to college and lived in an apartment for about 3 months and bought a house, and I'm still in the same house.
Oh, wonderful.
So.
Wonderful. It's interesting because that early 70s is about the time Franz left, and there were a bunch of people, it seems like, that left the AmFac.
And that was the difference in the management, and management had their own ideas about who should stay and who should go. It survived, but in hindsight, you wish that it had been different. So, you know, I think people that left were people who shouldn't have been let go. Everybody has their own ideas about how to do things, and I think you find that in everything. And we would love to have stayed, but it was just not. And I think this is probably, when Frank and Hannah left, I think it was hard for Vern to see him go because, you know, Frank was doing a good job, and it was just somebody else didn't think the same way. So, we can only do what we can do, and you have to let it go from there. So, but, you know, we've had a good time in Tempe, and it was meant to be, I guess.
Nice.
We're close to all our kids, and that's the important thing.
Yes. And what are your thoughts on Tucson today, on the whole expansion, not expansion, city council journey? Any thoughts on that?
You know, it would have been nice to have seen it left the way it was. I guess if you have money, anything can happen, and that's what happened. Hopefully the people that are still there will make everything work and make it a good thing. Only time will tell. It's only been, what, a year? it's always, always nice to come back. And I always stay with Frank and Hannah when I come because we get a chance to visit.
Yeah.
And don't see them that often anymore. But.
And what would be your thoughts? I hear this often about that sense of community between who's ever managing the concession, Fred Harvey, whether it's Zanta or whoever, and the Park Service and the Tucson community. That sense of community that was there in the 60s, how could we rebuild that today?
I don't know that it could. I think that times change, people change, and I think we found that with all the superintendents. There were some that were agreeable to things and some that weren't. And I think as time goes on, I think maybe people want to have more say or be more in control of what's happening. Whereas I don't think it used to be that way. I think you work together rather than against each other. So it probably, I think they get along, but that's it. They don't mesh like they did. We were fortunate. I mean, we were here at a time when you were friends with the superintendent, and you were friends with Babbitts and any other groups that were involved. And you know, it was, well, in the school too. You know, all those people were good friends. And I'm not sure that that's there. I don't know, and I don't ask Sue and Eric enough about what's going on, but different time and different place, and you have to go with the flow. You do whatever you can do.
I wanted to ask you about health care at the South Rim. Did you know Dr. Lacey?
Mm-hmm.
What else can you tell me about health care at the time?
Probably the best. I just think of Helling Halverson when he had his, I can't remember if it was a helicopter crash or what happened with him, but we would go, because we lived right next door to the hospital, practically, and you know, we would go over and he would come in and he, the Laces were another family that were close, you know, and got to know Dr. Garbio too after he came, and he was so different than Dr. Lacey. But we
how were they different?
Different personalities, I think. Dr. Lacey may be a little more serious. Dr. Garbio just a little more outgoing, a little more friendly, I think. And in fact, he went to Chandler, and after we moved to Phoenix, Vern went to him for a while.
Hmm.
So we still had a connection to the Grand Canyon. But Lacey's were family-oriented, I think. I think they ran a good hospital, and it was important, you know, that it be there. And like I say, personalities make a difference sometimes. But, probably didn't have as much connection with Dr. Lacey as we did with Dr. Garbio. for whatever reason, I can't tell you. But good to have memories of these people.
And then the clinic, the new clinic hospital, was built in the early 60s.
It was built before we left.
Okay.
It was built as a hospital, and of course didn't stay a hospital very long.
Maybe a year or so?
I'm not sure. Mm. And then didn't... I'm thinking one of the Phoenix hospitals took it over for a while.
Samaritan?
Yeah.
Good Sam. Mm-hmm.
And then that didn't last too long either, did it?
Until 1999, I think. So a while, actually. Yeah.
So is the clinic run now by people from Flagstaff?
Flagstaff. Yeah.
But it's a necessity for up here.
I'd like to think so. I think, yeah.
You know, there's always people who are having accidents, and it's a stepping stone. At least people have a chance to find out what's wrong with them or are taken care of before they're transferred somewhere else.
That's right.
And in this big a place, you have to have something, I think.
Do you remember the big snowstorm of 1967? Were you guys here for that?
We were here. We had been to Albuquerque with our youngest daughter and came back and didn't know if we'd make it, but we kept going.
Driving in from Flagstaff?
Driving in from Flagstaff. I don't remember if we came 180 or we probably came 40. We knew our kids were home, and we knew we had to get here, so we did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of storms. Christmas time. Remember one year the kids in Bern hadn't got the Christmas tree, went out in a storm, cut a Christmas tree. Probably illegally, and there's, you know, as you talk with the kids, and all of a sudden they say, "Oh yeah, I remember that. That was neat." And so it's a good time to remember.
Sounds wonderful. So, a wonderful journey.
It is. And it, you know, something I would never have anticipated, having always lived in the same place and not knowing what your future was or if you were going to stay in the same place. But it's been good. So.
It's almost a spirit of adventure. It's what I learned from Rosie was, you know, German traveling to England, coming to the States, going to LA, coming back to the Grand Canyon, and then sort of staying here.
Yeah.
You find a nice place and you settle down. And
you do. And Phoenix might not have been the place that I would have chosen, but it's where we ended up, and it's been good.
So you guys moved to Phoenix then in 72?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which would have been a different Phoenix than it is today, of course.
Oh, yes. Sue was in college, and she was taking pictures of the cotton fields, which were a mile from the house. And I ran across a picture the other day. And she said, "Where'd you find that?" I said, "It's one of the pictures you took of your dad when you had him going to the cotton fields with you," because she was a photography major. And I have friends down there who say, "Oh, do you remember when?" It's like, do you remember when up here?
Yes.
We were here at the right time. And, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Lots of friends, and you say the Burke camps.
Did you know the Stevens? I'm trying to think of who else.
Oh, Judge Stevens?
Mm-hmm.
We lived in his house one summer. all I remember, we came up Fernwork up here probably while John Feedham was on vacation, and so they moved. He was gone by that time, but we moved into his house, and we also lived in the house, and I don't remember whose house it was, but the house that, the first house as you go to Avenue A, that sits kind of up on a hill, and Buford Myra Bellegarde lived in that later.
And what do you remember of Buford?
Buford, of course, was all American Legion. That was his life. And kind of Mary and Myra's, too. You know, and that was good. You need somebody that has a big interest in. And they were, you know, they were other people who you always got together with for whatever was going on. It was fun to be with. And somebody, do you know anything about Mary?
I know I want to interview her.
Well, I haven't. I heard somebody say she wasn't too well. I don't know. That might not be. You want to do it soon.
Thank you.
Because, you know, her life was Buford Myra. That was her family up here. I saw Mary about 3 years ago, Nana and I stopped and left a tape recorder with her and said, please, when you have time, do some of these memories for us. And I don't think she's ever done it. So I never followed up on it, which was my fault, probably. But it would have been fun because she had good stories to tell. And she was here a long time before we came. So.
I need to talk to Al Richmond and see if he can talk to her, and we'll see if we can make it happen. Yeah. Do you remember the Lopezes? Do you remember Jesse and...
Josie?
Yeah, Josie.
My daughter was married to Josie's son for a while. And well, they went to school together, and... Mary inherited a son who is coming up here today, first time he's been back since he was like this. Bring his family, who have been up here once before, but coming up for August 1st at Sue and Aaron.
Fun.
And Sue has pictures of Aaron when he was probably 6 or 7, maybe, I'm not sure. Stomping grapes, you know. And the guys all sitting around watching him. So, you know, it's hopefully it's a good time for him to come back and reminisce and remember his. His wife is a city girl, so I'm not sure whether the outdoors life will be. what you expect, but it'll be fun. It'll be nice, and Sue and Eric, I think, are looking forward to it. So it'll be fun.
Yeah,
you know, there's lots of people to remember, and you really have to start talking and reminiscing and say, oh, I remember them, you know. And it's not until you do that, you know. But Ray, Josie's husband, Ray Ferber. He was an electrician for Vern, and his brother, not his brother, his cousin Tommy was the plumber for Vern. So there's lots of connections there.
Did you know the Wattahomages?
Mm-hmm. Went to school with our kids, and our son Tom was married for a while to Gilbert Tamichi's daughter, and so there's connection there.
Nice.
You know, you remember where they all worked and what they all did. when Vern died, Gilbert came, and I couldn't figure out what Vern's suit had gray on it. And I said, somebody afterward, and they had spread something, but that was part of their culture. And, you know, and Gilbert had known Vern for so long that it was nice. And I'm sure the kids will remember too. But you could go on and on about memories that you have, but they're good memories. And they're, you know, things you look back on and you really appreciate the life you had. Probably we were more fortunate than a lot of people. I think a lot of people never have the chance to live the life we did. Like I grew up, you know, in the country and making my own fun and my own entertainment, and the kids did too. I think they appreciate it. I think that's why Sue and Eric are happy where they are out there. It's a quiet life. Nancy's made her own life in Tucson. Tom's doing what he wants to do. And our other daughter is in Denver, and a city gal.
Yeah, you're a big city.
Yes.
So, what are your thoughts on, I'm going to kind of broaden this out a little bit, because now that you have a rear view mirror of 8 decades, what are your thoughts on technology? When we're talking here, this is going into a digital file that we can share on a computer. Telecommunications changes, we've gone to the moon, just the nuclear age.
I have not followed the new. I do not have a computer. I don't have a phone that does all kinds of things. I keep telling people I'm too old to learn, and they say you're not, but I don't believe them. And figure if I need to do anything, my kids can do it. I don't need to learn at this age. I think I would like. I went the other day to a bookstore in Tempe, and they were talking about iPods and iPads. I think that would be fun. I think my kids would say, no, Mom. But I think it would be different. I mean, it's not like a computer. Put things up, and I may get an iPod and try it, see if I like it. Mm-hmm. If I don't, well, I'm not out that much. But I think it's great, all the things that all the new things can do. I think most of my kids can do everything fancy and do computers and internet and email, but I just I was never that interested in getting involved with it. I guess I should have probably, but I didn't. But I, some of it maybe not necessary, but maybe it is.
It's interesting because it seems as though we spend an awful lot of time staring at a plastic screen called a computer versus being outside doing a different type of entertainment, if you will, self-play, self-directed activities, and socialization together. And I'm just not sure that the computer is enhancing that skill.
No, I think more people are spending more time inside than outside. I guess just thinking of my own family. My girls all love to garden, and they do spend a lot of time out in the yard. They also spend a lot of time in the house and computers. And fortunately, they still have to write their mother or call their mother because I don't have any of those fancy things, and I like that. I do mailing from our church, and when the post office talks about closing because they, people aren't writing letters or anything, I think it's a shame because it's still nice to get a birthday card or a Christmas card rather than an email. It has its place. Nan, when we were in Michigan this summer, we had somebody try and break into the cottage. And so we got a young man who was a handyman, not a carpenter. And we had him come over to see if he could fix a window that had the bottom had rotted. And he spent probably most of an hour talking to the girls, and couldn't do it until after we left. So he emailed Nan and said, "I've got it done," and how much it was. And she must have emailed him back, because she got an email yesterday thanking us for letting him do the work, and hoped it was all right. And he said, "Please call me when you come back next summer, and if it isn't right, I'll fix it," which for a young man is very impressive.
Nice.
The girls were very impressed. So we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. It's always nice when you get a thank you from somebody, which a lot of people don't do anymore. I probably am guilty of not doing that myself sometimes, but if you don't write, you at least can call and say, "Thank you, I appreciate it." And I try and remember that, because as I get older, people look out more for me, and I try and at least say thank you. I don't like that they're doing it, but I understand where they're coming from.
So. And that's a good thing.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully it rubs off on my daughters, my son.
I'm sure it has.
So.
Yeah.
But it's been a good journey.
Sounds like a wonderful journey.
We've gone places and done things that most families don't ever. Probably they do more so than when I was growing up. But there's a lot of families that don't ever get anywhere. We've been here and done that, and gone to most of the states, and have friends in most of the states, I think. I just went back for my 60th high school reunion.
How was that?
They're in Michigan. There probably were 25 members of the class, and then a few spouses, a few friends. And, so it's fun.
Did anyone do any oral histories there?
So, other than keeping track of that we have done it, where we have done it, and who has been there, and pictures, I think that's, if it's not like this, it's at least on paper who was there, and who has died, and who wrote that they couldn't come? I think probably that's there.
Hmm. Hmm.
But it's, you know, it's, it, as you get older, it's a chore to try and keep track of people. And we've had the same committee ever since we started.
Is that right?
And they're getting weary.
Sure. Sure. You're all in your 80s now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, but it's fun just to know that somebody has an interest yet, too. And one of the, well, the last two or three years, one of the fellow's sons has been doing pictures, which is nice.
Nice. Good.
You say, oh, yeah, I remember them. Or, I'm glad they could come. So it's, that's like up here. They have one every 5 years, but it's for the whole school, not just a class.
So, Pat, I've talked with Franz and Hannah and Rosie and you, and I'd like to talk to Mary, Mary Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
Who else would you recommend that I chat with?
You know, I'm not sure who is around anymore.
I mean, I sort of think of you as my mom's age, you know, so I want to try to capture that generational shift. Yes, I could talk to Sue, and I could talk to Eric, and you know, their generation, your mm-hmm. children's generation, but trying to reach further back.
You know, right offhand, I can't think of anybody other than Mary. I'm sure there are a few out there, but...
You want to talk to Josie Lopez? Rebecca Watahamaji's brother, what's his name? He just retired from Park Service.
All I can think of right now is Cecil.
Oh, yeah. No, Cecil's passed away.
I mean, I thought he did.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so there are some other...
Yeah.
Dan Koska is one of my guys to talk to. And he's Papsupai.
Oh.
And you may not have met him.
Uh-huh.
But he's in his 80s or 90s now. For a long time.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how Gilbert Tamichi is. Lives on, I think he's out in Hopi Reservation. He was living with daughters off and on. He's, Teresa, and I can't tell you what her name is now. She was the gal who was married to my son. She's married again to a Hopi, and they live in Tubit City, I think, or that area. Her dad, if he could tell stories, you know, would still be a good one. And his father was Porter Tamichi, who was around at the canyon for years and years. And, you know, you can picture them in your mind, what they look like. And, you know, good people to remember, and you kind of remember the Indians who worked for you or worked where you were involved. So it's, yeah, I'll have to talk to the girls. We'll have to think of who else might be.
That'll be good.
In that generation.
And, yes. Yeah, that would be fun to chat with, especially if they're nearby. I need to try to track down Mary Hoover, of course. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah. And I have not seen Mary for a while, so I I can't remember with Sue.
There's that technology. Excuse me. See, it just jumps right in here. Hello there. Hello, Mike. How are you? Okay, sounds like a plan. All right. Very good. Okay. All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. It's that technology that just reaches out and grabs us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different.
It is. My cell phone is very basic. I bought a track phone that I add minutes to,
mm-hmm.
just so that if the girls need me or they're on their way home and want to call and say I'm home. But like I say, seeing everybody doing their iPads and all their technical phones, it looks like fun, but you have to try it in order to see if you're smart enough to do it. Maybe.
Yeah, I wonder. And I always wonder what happens when the electricity goes out. What will we do?
You find the candles and you enjoy right. the fun in the dark.
That's right. That's right.
So,
yeah.
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 It's kind of nice to be quiet and not have the TV on and not have the radio on and just be quiet and enjoy life.
It is interesting. We were yesterday, we went from here over to one of the restaurants here and the television's playing and there's sound from that and the background overhead music is going and people are talking and the waiters are running around and the people in the dining are dining and it's amazing how much stimulation is coming at us from so many sides.
Well, I walked down the hallway to come here this morning and the noise coming out of the dining room. You kind of, wonder how people can even hear each other. And it's like when there's music playing in a restaurant, if it's a live thing and people continue talking, I think, why don't they be quiet and listen to the music? But they don't.
That's right.
I was trying to think, I was somewhere the other day, and I was trying to listen to something. And the lady next to me insisted on visiting. And I thought, ooh, I'd love to tell her, I'm listening, please. But I didn't. So we're not a quiet civilization anymore. We have to be talking all the time, I guess.
Yeah, and you've seen Arizona fill in and double in population a number of times.
It's getting, Phoenix is getting too big. I think they've outstretched their limits. Going to Tucson, you know, we're going to meet one day. And it's not that fun town that used to be. And it'll never stop. It'll keep going everywhere. So. You have to move out in the country, I guess, to get away from anything. And I suppose I realize that more growing up in the country and having lived in it. I hope I never outgrow that feeling for small town. And that Tempe is still small. It's growing, but it's still, I'm in an old neighborhood. Not too many people I know anymore, but a few. And they change, but I don't.
Yeah, it's interesting watching the technology march along.
Mm-hmm.
And watch that.
It would be nice if time could stand still, but it doesn't. And technology is one of those things that, you know, we always have to learn more and do more.
Yeah, I was just thinking about your story about the toaster.
Yeah.
That you had to loan out to somebody, and, you know, when the toaster came along, well, the toaster came along because electricity came along, and because of electricity, we have the cell phone in the pocket and the recorder here, and all these amazing things. It's amazing technology, but there's a cost, or there's mm-hmm. a price, and at what price? I do not know.
But well, and I see my granddaughter, especially, always with her phone. You know, somebody's calling or something's going on or something's happening, and kind of a sad commentary. I mean, they're learning things, but there's other things in the world. Our pastor on Sunday was talking about making a trip in the 60s, taking the back roads back to the east, and he said, my two kids in the back seat with their heads with a blanket over them with their whatever they had at that time, you know. And I remember our kids with comic books mm-hmm. in their hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you'd say, oh, look at whatever, and they'd look right back to the comic book. So it's no different.
In a way, that's very true.
We just have to go back and remember all those things. But it's like coming home to come up here.
Yes.
Fun time.
Mm.
But this is good that you're doing this.
Well, thank you so much for letting me.
It's
a lot of fun. So, and with that, maybe I'm going to hit the stop button and
okay.